Black Rifle Coffee Company set out on a mission to make the best cup of coffee that's ever hit your mug. And I think they've hit that mission straight on. Their dream has been to sell enough premium coffee to build a support network for veterans, first responders, and law enforcement. And thanks to your support, that dream has come true. Black Rifle Coffee is roasted by a veteran-led team of brilliant coffee graders who work tirelessly to roast and bag the highest quality coffee here in America. And the coffee is truly one of a kind and my favorite. Your support has helped Black Rifle Coffee Company expand their team of active duty service members, veterans, and veteran family members. And they were able to donate over 120,000 bags of coffee to veterans and first responders in 2022. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana and use my code Dana at checkout for 20% off your purchase and your first coffee club order. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. Use code Dana and also look for Black Rifle Coffee in grocery and convenience stores. Black Rifle Coffee, America's coffee.
And the extreme MAGA Republicans are trying to sensationalize an issue that doesn't really exist in the way that they are falsely portraying.
Man, isn't that just like a Democrat man to get out there and say that this issue doesn't exist? That's Hakeem Jeffries, who is the chair of the DNC. He got out there and said that this morning after the House had passed the Protection of Women in Sports Act, which is the transgender lady athlete bill. And they passed that, and Democrats are apoplectic over it because it means that they're going to have to address it now, too, and they don't want to because they've been trying to triangulate this whole issue. Welcome to the program. I'm going to need more coffee today with some, like, with some Granny Rich in it. Yeah. Granny Rich is, like the whiskey.
Yes.
You know, the Granny Rich whiskey. John Rich is going to come up here and stick a boot up my backside. So welcome to the show. Dana Lash here with you. And this is one of the stories that we're following today. And I had apologies for my prep email. We apparently Substack had a fun little glitch and it didn't go out. So I went and I looked this morning. I'm like, oh, what is happening? So anyway, and apparently there was a wrong version saved and there were some issues. So that's something I got to look at after the radio program today. So first and foremost, the women, let me get the name right again. The Women's Protection in Sports Act. This is the bill that is protecting literally like women. It's obvious, women in sports, right? It's the Women in Sports Bill. And it's protecting women's sports against the participation of men who are identifying as women and then competing. And you have athletes like Riley Gaines and a whole bunch of others. And I had a thought as I was watching all of these athletes, and Steve Scalise had some really good words on it. I'm watching these women say things that seemed like it would almost be obvious feministy things from like the 60s, except it's not really feminism. It's women fighting to merely exist and keep their sports. You know, when women wanted to participate in athletics, we didn't bust up into men's leagues and demand that they accommodate us and change their rules and do all of these other things for the consideration. We didn't do that. We created our own leagues. And now we're having to deal with men coming into our leagues saying that they identify as women and treating female sports like it's the JV or rec league. And I was watching these women. Some of them were female lawmakers. Some of them were athletes. And the first thought I had is, well, I can't say that. My first thought was, where the burp are people like Dianne Feinstein? Where are these old barnacles on the USS feminism that got rich off of this? These broads made fat bank off of grifting. They were selling women a story of oppression. And when oppression actually arrives, these broads are nowhere to be seen. That's a bitch move. I said it. I'm going to say it again. You know why? Because sometimes certain situations require certain wake-up calls. And that's one of them. It makes me so mad because they divided further men and women. They made women question their worth because they couldn't measure by the same standard as men. I mean, if you have a, if you tell a fish to climb a tree, yeah, you're gonna, the fish is gonna feel like a failure if it can't climb a tree. These were women who set up these arbitrary standards. Oh, you don't work as many hours as a man. You don't do the exact same job as a man. You don't have the exact same strength as a man. They were using male standards against women's makeup and using that as a way to degrade the value of women. Other women who claim to be our sisters. And now, when oppression is actually here, these lazy broads are nowhere to be found. They made their millions off the backs of women, and now where are they? Where are they now, for real? Where in the world are they? Nowhere to be found. I find it galling. They're sellouts. And they sold out females. And I thought about that the whole time I was watching these women stand up to speak. I mean, it's like a tailor-made situation for the Linda Hirschmans of the world. For the Gloria Steinems of the world. You know, all of those women who incessantly complain that women were unequal to men. Women were unequal to men. Let's burn our bras. Let's do all this stuff. Blah, 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 blah. And then now, I mean, here you actually have a situation of dudes trying to take over women's sports. Where are you? Not a peep. Not a single damn word from any of these women. None. Because they don't really believe in what they're selling. They sold oppression as a way to elevate themselves. And that was it. They never offered any solutions. They never did anything. All of their policies were designed to actually weaken women. Think about it. They act like abortion on demand. Taxpayer funded is the big issue. Letting men off the hook of their responsibilities and making women bear the burden alone. That's what they promoted. Government funded, always with hands out to Uncle Sam, while having the audacity to describe that as some kind of BS empowerment. No, I mean, karma's real, man. That's all I'm going to say. But they sold out women. And all these women, they were there speaking up for women's sports. And that was the thought I had. Where are the Democrats for this? And then you got Hakeem Jeffries, the chair of the Democrats. Well, that's where they are. Not a single Democrat voted to protect women's sports. We don't want to hurt the men's feelings. We have to validate the men at the expense of women. Now, if you were to define the patriarchy, you know, like if we were all pretending we were back in the 60s and we're going along with this feminist mumbo jumbo stuff, then if you were to define the patriarchy according to how they view it, would that not be the definition? For real, that would be the definition. If I hear one more of these broads say anything about feminism, I'm going to lose my ever-loving mind. I'm done. Done with this garbage. I mean, now Title IX is being used to completely undermine women in sports. And I mean, it is just, it's amazing. And then the people who were protesting them, oh my gosh, not one Democrat. Not one voted to protect women's sports. Wow. So there you have it. Now, a couple of other things to hit. Nebraska's legislature passed a permitless carry bill. 33 to 14, it's going to the governor. They're going to pass it. In the meantime, Washington State banned semi-automatic rifles. We're going to dive into that as well. Deep dive into that and look at some of the stuff that states are doing. Now, another thing that I want to hit, and I had it a little bit later on here, because we're going to get into some of this other stuff, the immigration, the credit. I'm sure, did you all watch the SpaceX launch, the rocket launch? And how long was it in the air? And then there was an explosion. It was like pretty crazy that it got up because it was like a new innovation that they were using in order to get this rocket up into space. And I mean, I know what I know and I know what I don't. And I appreciate those who know what I don't know, right? And I realized, even going into this, that it wasn't so much as getting it out there. It was getting it off the launch pad, getting it to a certain point, because they have like a bunch of other rockets ready to go. And all the people in the media showing how dumb they really are seized on this. Like, oh my gosh, look at it. And like it was some sort of proof of how badly they think of Elon Musk. Oh my gosh, look at how bad this is. It's so bad. And they completely ignored really the importance of what they were seeing, like what actually was happening, and the technicality involved in it. I think people are so used to NASA, which cannot fail, right? Because it's NASA, it's government funded, there's a lot of stuff with it. NASA can't fail. And with this, they're able to take these tests and have these experiments and do all of this. It was really something to watch that. Did you see some of the reaction that they had with the press, with CNN and with MSNBC and everything else? Because it was pretty something. The whole point was that, I mean, they knew that that was a possibility, and this is like a process. These people are morons. We're going to talk a little bit about it because that they're using it as a way to say, look, I guess Elon Musk and SpaceX, they're not, I mean, I'm not sitting here like carrying the guy's water or, you know, standing for the guy, but that's just so dumb, and it's illiberal and anti-academic and anti-scientific. That's what it is. Pretty amazing to watch. And I saw that rapid unscheduled disassembly was trending. You know, when something does go, if they have an error, which they anticipate, they have to have the error in order so as to A, prepare, and B, remedy, see how it happens so that they know what to do next time. That's all a part of this process. Of course, I wouldn't understand people who can't even define what the hell a woman is and don't even understand how scientific theory works, where we live in a culture and everyone wants to fit the evidence into their preferred narrative. I'm totally not shocked that these people don't understand this, that they do not understand this, because we are dealing with a bunch of morons. We live in an idiocracy. The time is already here. I mean, I can't remember what network it was on. It was a clip that was circulating on Twitter, it was a female. And she was saying, what did I just watch here? Oh, what a disaster. I mean, I even knew what the purpose of this launch was. How do you not? Good grief. You have producers whispering in your ear. All those producers handing you stacks of prep while you're on air, because all you do literally is roll out of bed, show up. Everyone puts makeup on your face and they do your hair. And then you sit your fat ass in front of the anchor desk and you repeat things that interns and staffers who make a third of your salary, like, were paid to put together and hand you so that you can sound knowledgeable. And you couldn't even be prepared enough to know that. Shut up, Karens. Shut up. Ah. Golly, we live in the dumbest time ever. By the way, BuzzFeed is shutting down. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All of a sudden, you know that at the end of Inglourious Basterds, towards the end, when you have, oh my gosh, her name slips my mind right now. It's towards the end when they're burning down the theater, and the girl whose family had been killed by the Nazis hunter, she appears laughing on the screen as it erupts into flames. I feel like that right now over BuzzFeed. I have to say I do. That's a feeling right now. All right, as we get moving, because we have a bunch of other things to get into. What's going to happen now with this bill? We'll talk about that. The administration. Remember, too, how Biden, my friend Carol Roth, made this good point. Remember how Biden went on this warpath over junk fees? Okay, so how is he doing that and then justifying what he's doing with mortgages and credit fees? Exactly. When you see judicial rot running rampant and American companies embracing insanity and wokery, you got to fight back, starting with the way that we spend our money. So for years, big mobile companies have dumped millions into leftist causes, and we just kind of took it because another option didn't exist. Well, now one does. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, and they offer dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks, so you get the best possible service in your area without the woke propaganda. And when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you support free speech and religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, and our military veterans and first responders. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call them at 878-PATRIOT and get free activation today with offer code Dana. Ask about their coverage guarantee as well. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT.
How much is the mainstream media in cahoots with the Biden administration? Since when did the media care so much about catching leakers? Is that their job? Should they be asking more questions instead of being another wing of the White House? Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So Microsoft has dropped Twitter from its advertising platform. It's another service that passed on paying for Twitter's new high-priced API. And so for some of the people listening, you may have noticed that I can't embed like tweets into my Substack newsletter chapter and verse anymore, and it's because of this issue. So they changed, and they're basically trying to make money off of that. So if you want to be able to have that embed capability, like for instance in Substack or like with Microsoft, because of the API, the high price, they've dropped it from their advertising platform, and it's one of the reasons why also Substack is had those issues too. So it's very interesting. Now Musk is now threatening to sue Microsoft over using Twitter data for its AI. So similar but separate. It says they trained illegally using Twitter data, and he said it was lawsuit time on social media. Microsoft, this was after Microsoft announced that they were dropping it from Twitter from their advertising platform. So they said that the AI is using Twitter data, and that's his allegation. So it looks like they're going to be going to court for that. So the CDC approves a new government injection. I know you're going to go out and get one right away, right? The government approved a second dose of the COVID booster. There's like four or five shots out there right now already. They say that these booster injections target the Omicron variants, and seniors 65 years or older can receive the injection. No idea whether or not this particular injection was actually tested to see if it prevented transmission, because the earlier ones all were not. I don't hold out hope, and I'm still not doing it. There you go. This is wild. An NIH-funded study. Up to 1 in 4 middle and high school students are using Adderall. And in fact, in some U.S. schools, so I went and looked at this. This is actually, I think, maybe even underplaying the problem. They said that up to 25% of students in some U.S. schools are abusing, because they don't really need it, ADHD drugs. And they said a lot of this happened over coronavirus, the pandemic. The lockdown made it to where everybody got really relaxed with regulations and testing as well. Because if you're going to go in and get, if you're going to get diagnosed with ADD, you go through a gamut of tests. At least if you're seeing an actual qualified medical doctor, then that's what happens. But a lot of people were just throwing out scripts, is kind of what it sounds like. So the use of Adderall has soared. And that's one of the reasons, I guess, why there's a shortage of it. And yeah, I mean, it has since March of 2020, it's more than doubled in usage by kids. More than doubled. That is stunning. So coming up, the latest on the budget battle, GOP infighting, media, all kinds of stuff. Stick with us. As colleges and universities across the country hold their graduations, I'd like to highlight a place where students receive the best classical liberal arts education in America. And when these students graduate, they've studied the great books, the history of Western civilization and of America, and the meaning and history of the Constitution. Can you guess who I'm talking about? I'm talking about Hillsdale College. Hillsdale was founded in 1844 to offer the kind of education needed to preserve civil and religious liberty, and holds true to that mission while refusing to accept one penny of taxpayer funding, not even indirectly, in the form of student grants and loans. Hillsdale students also abide by an honor code, which ensures a unity of purpose and fosters lively, civil, and intelligent debate. See for yourself and learn from Hillsdale for free through their influential speech digest in Primus, and by taking online courses on American history, the Constitution, and other subjects. Find out more at dana4hillsdale.com. That's dana4hillsdale.com. Join the battle over education for our country's future today.
YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV. If you're looking for the number one afternoon host in the country, you found her. Download the podcast every day to catch up. The Dana Show.
You also plan to make important investments to address the roadway safety crisis, including the critical funding that would accelerate the development. And this is an area I've written to you about, of the use of female dummies in crash testing. This will start to fight the gender inequity among vehicle safety and crash victims.
Oh my God, no.
What in Cinnamon Toast Crunch hell did I just watch? First off, what's Perry Farrell doing in Congress? When did he get elected? I thought he was like really busy with Jane's addiction. in once, which was five. I enjoy stealing. That was, what's her face? Rosa DeLauro.
Yeah.
I mean, I could be convinced that, you know, all right, Perry passes. He passes. That's it. He passes as a chick there in a way. So welcome back to the program, Dana Lash. That's her big area is, why don't they just use her? Female crash test dummies? Really? It's that, that's a thing? That's a thing that she's like really concerned about? We gotta have...
Yeah, first she said female dummies and then crash test dummies.
Yeah, she had to hurry up and I mean, so no one is under the impression that it's me I'm talking about here. So Rosa DeLauro, that's an, I'm not making this up, that she actually said that. She praised Mayor South Bend for working to ensure that female crash test dummies are used in vehicle crash testing. Is there...
Oh, my God. I can't.
Guys, I think I'm going to play this audio soundbite all the rest of the show. I'm not joking you. This is one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. Is there some sort of like significant difference? If you say boobs... What, I mean, for real, like, what is the, why is that a thing? Is that actually a thing? Like, why would that be important? I mean, everybody's head gets bashed in the same way if they're not wearing their seatbelt and stuff, right? I mean, yeah. I'm just curious as to why that's the thing. I mean, there's certain things that, but she's like, this is my big, because of gender equity with car crash studies. That's what she had said? Oh, man. They don't believe in protecting women's sports. But they do want female crash test dummies, damn it. Get it right. I mean, women's sports, no. I mean, who cares? But women crash test dummies, that's where we're going to, that's the hill we're on which we're planting this flag. Representative Farrell from California, I'm sorry, DeLauro. She's from New York.
I always felt like female crash test dummies didn't get enough representation.
Well, I mean, I see them in Congress all the time. I think they like mistakenly shipped them to the wrong place. I can make a million jokes here. I'm made of jokes now for the rest of the program on this. I mean, good heavens. You know how you, I mean, there's a, there, you, golly, I can't even, I'm turning into Norm MacDonald right now. I just have three things in my mind that I can't say. None of them I can share. Yeah, sorry, she's from Connecticut, not New York. Representative Perry Fair. I'm Rosa DeLauro. Right. And she says, yes, you know, she literally said we have to fight the gender inequity amongst crash victims. This is where I just think that there's too much time on some people's hands. I mean, it's a damn car crash, right? You're going to get busted up regardless. I mean, there might be a little bit, there might be a couple of differences, but you're going to, this is so goofy. And it's goofy because this is what they're talking about while refusing to protect women's sports. Make this make sense. They won't protect women's sports, but this is their, you know, the female crash test dummies. It's where it's at. I'm telling you. Now, the other remark, audio soundbite 23, from Mayor Secretary South Bend, Poot Booty Judge, Geig. I'm turning into Moira Rose talking about fruit wine. Secretary Mayor South Bend, he was talking about transportation because roads are racist and also the weather. Listen.
Of both profound challenge and historic opportunity for U.S. transportation. On one hand, our transportation systems are still grappling with the consequences of the pandemic, climate change, and decades of disinvestment.
That's all Democrats talk about doing, though, is we need more roads and bridges.
Spend more money.
And also, I mean, a lot of this stuff is state regulated, like with a lot of the... That's the other thing that they don't apparently realize. But it's climate change, Kane. You know, it's made the traffic issues, the transportation problems, you know, because it rains and it makes him have to stay home because he doesn't want to get wet. He doesn't want to, like, walk out, you know, with his little Buster Brown loafers and get mud, you know. I mean, so he stays home. It's climate change affecting transportation because he can't do his job, Kane.
You know what's upsetting is that the climate changes four times a year. It's really frustrating for somebody like Pete.
Yeah, the climate also changed in Texas. It is cloudy. It changed here. I don't know. Guys, I can't even almost make fun of it anymore because we pay for this. This is our government at work, if you want to call it that. Man. But I think that it also sounds like they're just trying to justify this department. I mean, what is the point of this department? We have supply issues. We have a lot of holdup at ports, particularly in Los Angeles, to say nothing of rail. Now everyone's paying attention to rail. Notice all the people who got mad at the Keystone Pipeline and demanded that crude be transported via rail. They're not saying anything now. They're all quiet. It's really difficult to talk about it. Now, one of the things that the House passed today, and Kevin McCarthy gave remarks just a little bit ago, the Protection of Women and Girls in Sports Act, 219 to 203, no Democrat supported. But hey, those crash test dummies, though, gender equity and stuff. How are you sitting here arguing about gender equity and you can't even talk about women in sports? That's wild to me. So they passed it. This was a campaign promise that they also had delivered. Because the bill, they were trying to, Democrats wanted to essentially redefine what Title IX was. And this was introduced by a couple of different Republicans. In February, they were trying to get this bill out of committee the last two sessions of Congress, but it wasn't happening because Democrats controlled the House and they weren't letting it on the floor. So now it got to the floor and it's been passed. And you had House Majority Whip Tom Emmer with McCarthy and other Republican leaders. And then Hakeem Jeffries gets up there and saying, he literally said, this issue doesn't exist. He said that. Man, you better be telling that to some of the female athletes. Imagine a man walking out there to the podium, a progressive man. Ladies, the stuff that you're dealing with, your struggles don't exist. We don't see you. That's some misogyny right there. That is some misogyny. And then he's like, extreme MAGA Republicans. What does this have to do with MAGA? You know, a lot of the people that were raising issues and concerns over this were Democrats. Man, what a way to shoot yourself in the foot with your own base, man. Extreme MAGA Republicans, they're just trying to jam their right-wing ideology. Yeah, having a vagina, some real right-wing ideology right there. Woo, boy! Man. But he said it didn't exist. Didn't exist. You know, I do think, we talked about this last segment, and the thought occurred to me during break. Do you think that if people like find Gloria Steinem and those other dinosaurs from the Paleolithic era of feminism, do you think that if they came out and were actually talking about this, would it move the needle with Democrats? Would Democrats in power actually have a fight on their hands within their own ideology? Or do they even have that much sway anymore?
I think the media would play favorites, and I think the preferred narrative would get more attention, and the one that isn't preferred would not.
Yeah, perhaps. I have some other audio that I want to play for you, too, here before we get moving. This, because we played 24 coming in, correct?
24, no, we didn't play that yet.
Okay, this was some of the remarks from that this morning. I just wanted to get that in because there were a lot of people that I know for a fact, a lot of people that were turning out to support this were not Republican. Listen to this, and I think you can watch the simulcast too.
On this vote, the yeas are 219, the nays are 203. The bill
no Democrats.
Is passed.
No Democrats.
Without objection, a motion to reconsider is laid on the table.
No Democrat lawmakers, but there were Democrat supporters of this. And they watch their elected officials just completely ignore them. Something else. Now we'll see what the Senate does. Coming up, more reaction to the subsidies for high-risk home buyers. This is, we talked about this first yesterday. Pretty amazing. And the response is not what, I don't know, I think that some of the left is, they're struggling. Also, I'm really tired of all the 2024 stuff, and I really wish that I wish that Trump's advisors would attack Gavin Newsom as much as they try to go after, like, actually, you know, good conservative governors. Like, whose side are you on? We got to talk about this. Kel-Tec launched into 2023 this year with a new addition to their lineup of innovative high-performance firearms. The new Kel-Tec P15 has broken the mold. Compact and maximum firepower generally don't go hand in hand. However, the P15 offers both in a uniquely small package. The P15 is an excellent choice for concealed carry. It offers plenty of dependable firepower to secure your world. This striker fire pistol is the lightest, thinnest, double-stack 9mm handgun on the market. At only 14 ounces, 7/8 inches wide, and a 4-inch barrel, you could say mini, but mighty. The double stack magazine holds 15+1 total capacity. That's standard. All Kel-Tec firearms are made in the USA and come with a lifetime warranty as the original owner with proof of purchase. Sign up for the Kel-Tec Insider and get a 15% coupon for your next order of gear and accessories. The P15 is an excellent choice if you're looking for concealed carry. Learn more at KelTecWeapons.com. That's KelTecWeapons.com. Secure your world with Kel-Tec.
Whether you just want to stay informed or just hear her vent about all the ridiculousness in the world, make sure to download the Dana Show podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
But we have 1,000 billionaires in America. You know the average tax rate they pay? 8%. 8%.
Eight percent. It's A. It reminds me of Joey Tribbiani on Friends. Well, you know, it's a moo point. A moo point? Yeah, it's like a cow's opinion. It just doesn't matter. It's moo. Welcome back to the program. Ah, yes, the President of the United States. I don't even know if that's true that there are 1,000 billionaires in the United States. Are there 1,000 billionaires in the United States? I mean, I don't care. I mean, I'm just happy that somebody can make money and be a billionaire. If I'm not a billionaire, I'm not going to get mad that you're a billionaire. That's kind of, you know, I'm not going to, I don't operate like that. If you have, I don't know, what kind of, I was going to name a fancy car and I realized there's some I just don't like. If you have something that I want, it doesn't mean that. To me, I look at it that doesn't mean I can't have it. I just, all these people that go on and on about, oh, it's generational wealth. That doesn't actually exist in the United States. In fact, that was one of the most fascinating, the things that Tocqueville found most fascinating when he was touring through the United States trying to figure out why is it that the American Revolution ended up with such a different result than the French Revolution. And he noted how so many European nations protect generational wealth with tax structures and inheritance and everything else. And he's like, in the United States, it's almost like you're penalized for it. I mean, he didn't say it like that, but that was, you know, basically the intent. He's like, it's like you're penalized, which you are, even back, because there were no protections for it. And look, I think you should be able to make as much money as you want and can make, and you should be able to do with it whatever you want. Why? I've never bought into that whole Marxist mindset that you have to be ashamed for working hard and wanting to be successful. I get really Dagny Taggart about this stuff. And I loved how in Atlas Shrugged, like, she would still wear her furs and her jewelry and all that stuff out when she, even though it, because the government was making everything heinous, she still, that was like her battle flag. That's what she, to show that she appreciated coming from, you know, creating your work, working hard and enjoying the fruits of your labor. And this is, I mean, you should be, anybody should be able to do that. If you can do it, then why not? Why? And if you want to be able to pass on something to your kids, why is that something to be ashamed of? Because, see, they want you to feel ashamed for working hard, but they feel no shame in wanting something for not working hard. They want something for nothing. And apparently that there's not supposed to be any shame in that. But I don't subscribe to that view. I don't subscribe to that view at all. And that's what they're pushing. That's what Democrats are pushing with us. That's what they're pushing with the budget stuff. That's what they're with all of this. That's I don't know. I think it's harder to sell people on that when we are in such a bad economic time. It's a lot harder to sell people on this. A lot. So, yeah. I had a thought last night. So we had a very interesting dinner table conversation. And I came up with a really good idea. I'm like, man, what if you had like a sci-fi horror film, AI battling aliens? It's mine. If you steal it, I'm going to come for you. I'm litigious. What if you had AI versus aliens, like fighting? And then I thought, man, I would love to write the screenplay for something like that. But I unfortunately don't know any like of the rocket science terms. You know?
I like it.
Like, sir, the poople snuffleupagus is out. And we've got to increase the vex hectares to fix it.
Oh.
Well, that's great. We found a hidden schnocknopity in the back. I mean, I was thinking, like, how would you do it? Because I don't know any of the technical terms that would be. But that would be, I would watch that.
Sounds convincing.
Yeah, not intended to be a comedy. Like, I want people to be terrified, right? Like, right. AI versus, who would win? What if, you know how we were talking about the UFO hearings yesterday? What if aliens are like, these people are about ready to go bananas. Let's help, right? What if, because the AI, like, they're going to get taken over by their AI overlords and stomped into wet smush in the grass. We got to help them. So what if it's that? Who would win? Sounds like a film. I would want to watch it, even though I don't know any of the verbiage. But, you know, I want to write the screenplay. We have another hour coming up. Don't go anywhere. More of the Dana Show after this.
We have been calling for Speaker McCarthy to put a bill on the floor that is going to avoid default. That's what we are asking for. We will have a conversation on the budget, on the 22% cuts that he wants to put on veterans, on education, on cancer research. We'll have a separate conversation on that. But they need to not, Speaker McCarthy must not waste time. He must not play chicken, if you will, with the full faith and credit of our nation.
Just to be,
Don't do chicken.
Yeah, don't do the chickens. None of the chicken. None of that. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash with you. Top of the second hour. Ooh, boy. And, of course, you can listen to the simulcast. Or you can listen to the radio program, actually, across the country. And you can also watch the simulcast of the radio program on YouTube, Facebook, and Channel 347, DirecTV. That's the latest back and forth with this over the debt ceiling, which I think that it's kind of already this whole point. I think it's kind of, I mean, the full faith and credit of the nation is Democrats kind of already been playing chicken with that this entire time. Now, they've been making some pretty reasonable demands, and the media is trying to bait. I mentioned this the other day. Have you noticed the media is trying to bait Republicans into doing what they want with the specter of, oh, well, other Republicans don't like what you're doing? Have you noticed this?
Mm-hmm.
They've been doing it with the debt ceiling. They've been doing it with the Women's Protection and Sports Act. They've been doing it with abortion. They've been doing it, anything that relates to, from 2024 primary stuff to debt ceiling. They've been trying to, they get the, like, for instance, where's this at? I've seen the same thing used with the debt ceiling, because they had some kind of Republican operative, and it turned out it was like a recent Democrat pollster. And they were trying to get this headline going of, oh, some Republicans are wanting Kevin McCarthy to, you know, not really go so hard on debt ceiling, etc. They were doing this, like the New York Times had a thing about 2024 where someone was saying, oh, no, I don't know, DeSantis's electability pitch was wobbling. And when you look at who the individual is, this person named Sarah Longwell, who keeps like coming up as like someone who actually supports Joe Biden, someone who gets money from Democrat organizations, and who all their clicks come from any kind of war between Republicans. Or I look at who was it? Who's the, oh gosh, I can't, Michael Steele. Like Michael Steele, who at one, a long time ago, was the moderate squishy chair of the RNC very briefly, and he goes out and says things about, oh well, you know, the debt ceiling, you know, Kevin McCarthy's over his skis, or I can't remember how he put it. These are people who are Democrats already, but they try to sit here and push this idea that, oh, other Republicans are suggesting this, so and they want like people in Washington know who these people are, but the people who, you know, work 9 to 5 actually longer than that in this economy and are just trying to make ends meet, they don't know the ins and outs of all this. They don't know who all these players are. All they see is the media is trying to prop up somebody who looks like a Republican who's criticizing other Republicans for doing something that Republican voters wanted. And they want to use that as some sort of psyop to make Republican voters think that they don't want that at all because other Republicans are questioning whether or not they do. That's the whole purpose. You can't water down conservatism. You can't, especially when it comes to the economy. You can't. You cannot water this down. It never, ever goes over well. It never succeeds. Because if people have if they have to choose between Democrat light and Democrat, they're going to just choose the Democrat. I mean, what's that? They're just going to pick the Democrat. That's it. I mean, we have all this stuff at the border. We have all of this issue with women's sports, energy, and you have the government, you have the media baiting Republicans into backing away from things. Now, a couple of other, I'm going to pull this up, that we have some 2A stuff that passed, and I want to make sure that we're getting it. So first off, House Judiciary said that they just voted to repeal the ATF's ban on pistol braces. So this is good. Now, if you remember, I wrote about this at the time. You don't even have to know what a pistol brace is. It was created by someone for disabled veterans. For the guy who created it, he did so for his friend who had returned from combat and had a disability, and it was actually to help him stabilize, help him use his firearm. And it doesn't make anything, doesn't change the functionality of the firearm at all whatsoever, right? It's a pistol brace. And a lot of people were saying, oh, well, it's making pistols into SBR, short-barreled rifles, which, because, you know, the length of the barrel, we've decided to just arbitrarily make these into NFA items, meaning National Firearms Act items. It's a registry. It's a gun registry. And so, long story short, the ATF, and you heard the audio that we played yesterday of Steve Dettelsbach, who is the ATF director. When we were at SHOT Show last year, and SHOT Show is an industry event that's a private industry event. It's put on by the National Shooting Sports Foundation, otherwise known as NSSF. That is the actual outfit that represents and works with manufacturers. And so they put on this event called SHOT Show every year, and it's a way for all these other manufacturers and people who make things that go along with firearms to showcase what they have coming out in the next year. And it's a weird event because you have FFLs come out, you know, federal firearms licensees, the gun store owners. You know, you have all these different people who come out, you have military stuff there, law enforcement, so, you know, people who just work with regular mom and pop stores. It's also weird because you have people, it's always in Vegas every year, and you have people from Hollywood that come in. Typically, because with all the films coming out, you know how they do brand buy-ins with every, like, cereals and everything. Well, they do it with firearms too. Not all the time, but they do it with firearms too. Sometimes there's something specific that maybe the scriptwriter or the producer or director has in mind, and that ends up how it works. But they have people that come out that are involved with Hollywood, whether it's a prop masters, armorers, you know, weapons trainers, actors, etc. And they have that as a way for these people to kind of see what they have coming out, if this is something that they would like to use in a film, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a weird event because all kinds of people everywhere come out to it. So I remember at the last event, and everybody was coming up to me. I mean, everybody and their brother. Everyone was talking in low tones. You know, the ATF director actually spoke. The ATF director, we've had an acting director for the past, you know, few years. Dettelsbach came and was telling people how they could be compliant. And they were really targeting a lot of these mom and pop shops. So they have different levels, obviously, at the location where they have SHOT Show. And the people who are on the main street level, those are the biggest companies. They have the big, giant displays and all of this. Well, the mom and pop shops, which is over 80% of the industry, by the way, they're usually on a lower floor. And they don't have, like, all of the grandeur that comes with being on the main floor. And that's where the ATF puts their stuff. It's like they put it where you have emerging and smaller companies. And they were walking around. I was told by numerous vendors, they were walking around to all these different booths saying, oh, well, you know, we want to make sure that you understand how to be compliant, you know, with the pistol brace rule, et cetera, all of this stuff. And some people were upset at NSSF because they were there. I understand why they, I understand why NSSF tries to maintain a civil relationship with them, because that, you know, for better or for worse, regardless of how you view them, the way it is now, that's the regulatory agency for NSSF. So they are trying to keep the peace, so to speak. It's a difficult spot for them to be in, because they don't want to tick off the NSSF and then have the NSSF come and just bear down on all of these vendors. And some of the people that I spoke to at the booth are that petty, because I went over and I spoke with them, and I literally had a guy who would give the finger every time he mentioned Trump, an ATF agent who did that to me and to my face, like actually did that. And I realized, I was like, I'm trying to keep it civil, but we can go to not civil if you want. And I, you know, I asked one of the guys, I was like, did they get you from Central Casting? I'm like, did they just like go up to your neck of the woods and be all like, we need some good old looking boys that, you know, what can at least talk maybe a bare minimum about guns? And the one guy was like, well, I build guns. And I'm like, I can't tell you what I said. I was being real friendly, you know. But they ended up having every agent at that booth coming up at that point, standing there like a line. It was something else. But I asked them about this pistol brace, because the history of this, and again, you don't have to know this. You do, though. You need to know the agency behavior involved, because it's not just the ATF. It's the CDC. If you own property, the CDC was trying to tell you you can't collect rent to pay the mortgage on a property you own. So it is about regulatory abuse. And when I was asking these cats over at ATF about this, I'm like, wait a minute, y'all came out, you know, a few years ago telling all these people that this pistol brace was totally legal. In fact, some people on the left tried to challenge it. And at the time, ATF said, no, it's completely fine, whatever. The guy who created it in good faith sent the design to the ATF, told him what he was doing. They're like, yeah, that's fine. Then all of a sudden, boy, oh boy, they do a 180. All these people who had gone out there in good faith and made these purchases were now at risk of being felons. And I had this one cat telling me, well, you know, they're not going to be a felon because, you know, they have a grace period. I'm like, that's a BS way of you trying to get, you know, ex post facto. That's to get around that. I'm like, if they don't comply and do this, then they're a felon. I'm like, you are creating felons out of innocent people who have done nothing. And in fact, you're probably going to throw the book harder at them than you would at somebody like Hunter Biden for lying on a 4473. And that's God's honest truth. They've been going after FFLs if they have like a grammatical error and pulling their licenses. That's true, too. So for the House Judiciary Committee to do this is a big thing. So they're saying that they just voted to repeal that ban. That's huge. I want to get Jim Jordan on here because I want to talk about what that. So can I, you know, because we talked to Stephen Holbrook, too. There was like a way around the ban, but it gets in the weeds a little bit. But the problem with these agencies being able to do this, like with the CDC, for instance, like switch out the ATF and just for the CDC for a moment, they made this rule where they said that people who own property that rented out property, you could not collect rent. You still had a mortgage and taxes to pay. They left you out of the equation. They just told the people living in your property that they got to live there for free. And you had to abide by it, or else they were going to send the law after you. Now, Congress didn't pass that. It was an agency that decided to implement this rule. And for all intents and purposes, you had to treat it like law until it went through the process and the court system, until it was reversed by the courts. But up until that time, you had to abide by it and treat it as law, even though it wasn't. That's the problem with this. That's the pistol brace issue. It's not about the pistol brace, and it's not even about the ATF. It's about the issue of these agencies being given the power to create laws circumventing Congress and demanding that you comply with something that legally you really don't have an obligation to comply with. That's the problem. So I'm glad that the House Judiciary did this. I mean, this is, and all these people, like this one stupid woman. Oh, pistol braces allow more bullets. Shut up. I honestly think if you're this dumb on the issue, do society and humanity a favor and shut up. Don't pollute things with your irrelevant, uneducated opinions. It just infuriates me. We have more to come. We actually also have Alex Epstein, who's coming up. He's got a book out. We've talked about it before. He's the fossil future. His book is Fossil Future. He is an expert on green energy and why we need more oil and coal and natural gas, not less of all of this. And we're going to talk a little bit, too, about, you know, the Green New Deal and how it figures into this administration and the national security issue that it's creating.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So Joe Biden has already rejected McCarthy's debt limit plan. He says that it's because they're hoping to pass this next week. But Biden's already pouring cold water on it, saying that it's a non-starter. It would impose deep cuts to critical programs across the board. That's just because we can't afford it. He had said, quote, that's the MAGA economic agenda. He says that's and he goes, it's not a fiscal discipline. He goes, it's cutting benefits for folks they don't seem to care much about. Oh, my gosh. That's not it at all. We're going to talk more about this also. I said a little earlier, Nebraska lawmakers have passed a permitless concealed carry bill. That's a constitutional carry, despite opponents filibustering it for over 14 hours on three rounds of debate this session. Lawmakers voted 33-14 to pass it. Now, there's still the federal requirements in place, blah, blah, blah. But there's state power here. So now this becomes another state to add. So constitutional carry or permitless carry, as it is known as well. Also, this was interesting. The whole situation with the hacked stuff with Daily Wire. There was a writer with Wired, which is a digital publication, who was suspended because he was asking for people to send him hacked materials from it. And so thankfully he was suspended. I mean, that's the left. We talked about that yesterday. That is absolutely how the left does. Also, that says that a death row meal, a massive 29,000 calorie meal, could be the largest ever recorded. A guy known as the Butcher, he's going to be put to death. He's sentenced to die in prison. He wanted to go out with a bang. He had basically a meal that was 29,000 calories. I really don't think that he should, if you're a murderer, repeat murderer, I don't think you should get last meals. Alex Epstein joins us next.
Between Twitter, Facebook, or any of your social media, there's a lot of information out there. That's why your lovable curmudgeon is here to help you make sense of it all, live or on demand. The Dana Show.
First, decarbonizing energy. The United States is taking a bold action to put our energy sector on a path toward net zero emissions by no later than 2050. Through measures like our Inflation Reduction Act and the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, we're investing tens of billions of dollars in the scale up of new technologies like offshore wind, advanced nuclear, and clean hydrogen. We're building a clean transportation sector, from expanding electric buses, electrifying our government fleet of vehicles, to providing new tax credits for making and buying electric vehicles.
Yeah, those tax credits are kind of meaningless in a time when your purchasing power has been slashed due to inflation and the recessionary period. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. You can listen coast to coast. You can also watch the simulcast of the radio program, Channel 347, DirecTV, Facebook, and YouTube as well. This comes after, and we've talked about this, the big EV push, the leverage when we were looking at the, without these requirements, the sales of EVs, dramatically different. I mean, it's not going to accomplish a greener world. It's not going to do that at all. Our friend Alex Epstein, he is the author of Fossil Future. And you can also read him on Substack as well. And he's the founder and CEO of the Center for Industrial Progress. And he's proudly pro fossil fuels, as we are as well. Alex, good to see you. Thank you for joining us. Although I can kind of predict it, I wanted to get your response to what the president was saying here, because he spoke just a little bit ago, earlier this afternoon, repeating pretty much the same thing that he just said in the clip that we played. It's unrealistic, and it seems more of has nothing to do with green, not at all.
I mean, I think to call it unrealistic is really charitable. I mean, it's just profoundly destructive and based on falsehood. So let's just take his latest measure, which is he's attempting to use the EPA to mandate about 2/3 of cars be EVs by 2032. So this is less than 10 years. We're about 6% of current sales are EVs. And this is only with massive, massive subsidies and incentives to do it. They can only get it up to 6%. So they wanted to multiply 10x in the next 9 years. So first of all, this is forcing people to use something that's not good for them. If people were willing to choose EVs on a free market, that's amazing. That's great. But the fact that you want to force them shows that it's not going to be as good. And particularly for poor middle class people who can't have an EV as their second car or third car, as so many wealthy people do. Like, they are being forced to have an inferior vehicle. And this is depriving Americans of the freedom of mobility, which is a great thing. So that itself is terrible. But you couple that with, this is placing a massive new demand for reliable electricity on a grid whose supply of reliable electricity is declining. So this is absolute madness. You know, where I live in California, I happen to be in Dallas today, but which also has its own electricity problems. But where I live in California, you know, Newsom announced no more internal combustion engines. And then 5 days later, literally, he said, don't charge your EVs because we don't have enough electricity now. Why don't we have enough electricity? Because of his anti-fossil fuel policies. He's been trying to shut down reliable power plants and replace them with unreliable solar and wind, which doesn't work because those can go to near zero at any given time, as Texas saw during the freeze. So it is an absolute catastrophe to make us incredibly dependent on electricity and then destroy the supply of electricity. And that's what this so-called green initiative is doing. So it's not, I mean, unrealistic. It's just profoundly destructive and dangerous, and we really should be sounding the alarm.
And isn't it true, Alex, that even if we did, just say arguably that we had the infrastructure in place and we were able to even do something like this, we still don't have enough materials in the planet itself to even support widespread use of, you know, rare earth elements, green tech, the way that they're talking about with the reductions that they want, the percentage of people that they want reliant on this. From everything that I've read, and I think you've addressed this too, there, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here, but there isn't even enough of those resources to even facilitate that, to support that.
There's an important distinction here, which is there's not enough available resource in terms of reserves and what's possible on a near-term scale. So if you did like an MRI of the Earth, there is very likely enough of all these materials somewhere in the Earth, but you don't get access to things because they exist somewhere in the Earth. You have to actually have a way of getting them economically. They're not economic, otherwise we wouldn't have to pay for them via taxes, but even at anything that's not totally insane, we have nowhere near the scale. So here's an important statistic. Like, no major extractive industry, so something that's taking stuff from the Earth, has doubled in a 10-year period once it reaches a certain size. This whole green revolution involves 10 plus forms of minerals doubling in a decade. And this is in an environment which is an anti-development environment. So Biden talked about that infrastructure bill, bipartisan. Well, part of the reason it was bipartisan is because it was still anti-development. They didn't change any of the anti-development policies like NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act. And Biden just recently just banned mining in one of the most promising sites for all of these, quote, green materials in Minnesota. So we have an anti-development environment, and we're promising totally unprecedented, heretofore impossible levels of development. This is not a serious movement that wants a new form of energy. It's just looking for rationalization to destroy the energy that exists today, which is overwhelmingly fossil fueled.
I mean, I look at this. We're talking with Alec Epstein, whose book, Fossil Future, is a must read. It lays all of this out. I look at this, honestly, as just a way to undermine our national security and our energy sovereignty, for the lack of a better way to put it, and make us reliant upon China. These are the steps that you would take if that was what your goal was.
They were, but I don't know if you've noticed this, but they pitch it as, oh, this is going to make us amazingly energy secure. Like, this is because we're not going to depend on Russia. But the dependence of us on Russia for oil and gas, let alone what's needed, which would be even less if we were more pro-energy here, is nothing compared to the dependence of the whole so-called renewable supply chain on China. I mean, they can cut off huge parts of that supply chain and destroy it. They are controlling the stuff around the world. So it's fair to ask what is going on, because just take destroying our grid and the security of our grid. What would you possibly advocate besides destroy the supply of reliable electricity and increase demand if you wanted totalitarian control over people's lives? It's one of the best ideas I've ever heard.
That's the way to go about it. And also, of course, we can't forget about the gas stoves. At first they said, yes, we're looking at this. We need to regulate these essentially out of existence. No, we're not. That's a conspiratorial talking point. But then, yeah, we are. I mean, when you hear people like Jennifer Granholm and, you know, some of these other lawmakers, that's exactly what they're talking about. I know you've spoke on this. I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on it, because as someone who loves to cook, I will never use an electric stove. They're trash. They're absolute garbage. Gas is the way to go. I will only use gas. I will cook on an open fire before I ever use an electric stove. I wanted to get your thoughts on this.
I mean, well, first of all, this anti-gas stove thing is a part of this, quote, electrification movement. So it's notable, again, they're increasing demand for and dependence on reliable electricity and then destroying the supply of reliable electricity. So every time I see one of these things, that's one thing that scares me even more because it makes our electricity less and less reliable and they have more and more control over just the use of energy in our lives. But yeah, if people check out energytalkingpoints.com, one of my websites, and you search gas stoves, I have all the details you could want on this.
You were basically, the one, not to interrupt you, you were the one who also busted the study that they were using to try to undermine the safety of gas stoves because they were saying, oh, they're so dangerous. And these are all the fumes and chemicals that they're putting in your house. But it's true that they did the study in a completely like sealed room with no ventilation. And that's what they used to substantiate that claim.
Well, I debunked part of it. I'm not sure which debunking you're talking about, but I mean, so this is the thing. They had a study, and I believe it was something like they had some precise claim about this increases the incidence of asthma by something like 12.7%. Yeah. Anytime somebody makes that claim about asthma, you know 100% that it's BS. Now, asthma is not a virus or bacteria in your body, right? It's a set of symptoms. So, and its causes are not very clear at all. For example, as pollution has gone down, in many places, asthma has gone up. So the idea that just air pollution causes asthma and it's that simple, let alone you can quantify it to fractions of a percent, this is nonsense. So you automatically know you're dealing with a charlatan. But here's the real way you know you're dealing with a statist charlatan. If they discover some actual danger of gas stoves, or at least gas stoves without proper ventilation, why don't they just share the information with you and let you decide to do with it what you please? Maybe it's, hey, you should ventilate your home more. Maybe it's a pretty small risk compared to other things and you don't really care about it that much. You want to focus on other things. But notice they, whenever somebody thinks they need to use science to dictate your life, then they're almost always abusing science. They're using it as a means to statism versus as a means to inform you. And that was certainly the case with this pseudoscience. So it's no surprise it's pseudoscience if they're trying to use, quote, science to force you instead of use science to persuade you.
Yeah. No, I agree with that entirely. We're talking with Alex Epstein, whose book, Fossil Future, is a must-read. Okay, last thing. This, kind of going back a little bit to the China dependency, because obviously we have foreign policy concerns as it relates to China and Taiwan and shipping coming out, you know, near South China Sea, et cetera, et cetera. We had this conversation on air earlier this week because I'm a huge World War II history buff. And after World War II, after Pearl Harbor, we had this manufacturing capability that was amazing. We were also energy self-sufficient. There were so many things that the United States could rely on itself to accomplish. And when I see us becoming beholden to the very geopolitical foe that we're supposed to be kind of standing off against in the Pacific, I wonder what the future of the United States is going to be if we have to be beholden to these opponents, these ideological, you know, et cetera, opponents like, you know, China or Venezuela or Russia for, you know, dirty oil and gas or for rare earth elements, without the, you know, refinery capability and the extraction capability here because of this administration. If this doesn't course correct within the next election or so, Alex, where do you see this going?
It's a really scary situation. I feel like we're in one of these situations where you look back at history and you think, what were they thinking? Like, this was obvious that there was a huge threat mounting and they did nothing. So you look at China, it has the explicit goal, so communist China, of being the world's leading superpower by 2049. And what are they doing to accomplish it? One of the things is they're seeking, like, essentially total dominance of all critical minerals around the world, both their extraction and their processing. What is the United States doing? We are following this net zero idea, which is basically just saying, let's abandon our use of fossil fuels, even though there's no cost-effective alternative. So we're gutting our energy capacity. We're also more broadly opposing development. So we don't even have the ability to mine for, let alone process, all of these different minerals that we're becoming increasingly dependent on. And then, of course, we're just getting in all of these like cultural things and fixating on all these different kinds of things. And it's just, like, what do you think is going to happen? And, you know, of course, they're also focused on very advanced weaponry, this kind of thing. And then our military is focused on these PC things and also being net zero. Like, the military needs a lot of jet fuel. There is no net zero way of having jet. And you should not be pursuing this. As I agree with Elon Musk on this. We should be absolutely focused on our defense for military. So China's purpose is becoming the world's leading superpower, and our purpose seems to be to be appeasing the sensibilities of the most irrational people in academia. And those two purposes, one will win, unfortunately.
Unfortunately. Very true. Alex Epstein. You can find him on Twitter. You can also get his book, Fossil Future, and find energytalkingpoints.com, which I think you should have bookmarked because it is a just an absolute wealth of information. Alex, so good to see you. Thanks so much for joining us. Would love to have you back also because, you know, this issue is not going to go away within the next couple of years at least.
Anytime. Thanks a lot.
Good to see you.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Man, I don't even know what this is. I've got a whole... First, can I just... Let me start with doing something weird. I'm telling you, Portland Man is giving Florida Man a run for his money. I got to show this headline. A Portland pastry chef mauled by off-leash dog. Dog's handler promptly ODs on fentanyl.
What?
It's a pastry chef. This is in Portland, recovering after being attacked by a dog on Monday of this week. Cheryl Wakerhauser owns Pix Patisserie. She says she was out on a run along Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard. She was attacked and mauled by a dog. She reports the dog was off leash in a parking lot. The dog grabbed her leg, attacked her legs and arm. She has 35 puncture wounds. So then she caught the eye of a driver who turned around and honked her horn to scare the dog off. She says at the same time that happened, a man with a leash walked up, said it wasn't his dog, and then led the dog away. Another witness followed the man and the dog, led police to them. And then while this was all happening, apparently the guy who owns the dog who was there apparently ODs on fentanyl. He literally ate fentanyl while the police were taking the dog. He tried to run away and then got a couple steps away and ate fentanyl. What? And then ODed immediately.
Like suicide?
I don't know. I just,
what the heck?
I don't know, man. That was ABC Channel 2 in Portland. That's a real story. Oh, let's see. So we got this. A Cape Coral man fell through the attic while hiding from police. He was, cops arrived. This was at a 28-year-old's residence, Daniel Flores. They knocked on the door, Lee County Sheriff's Office. They got no answer. They saw, the sister said she saw him go into the attic. Detectives knocked on the door. They tried to speak with him. He had an active warrant out for his arrest that they were serving. And they waited for like an hour and a half. No response. He was still in the attic. And then he literally fell through. Took their fan down and everything. Fell through. He got cut up a little bit. And they took him into custody. That's never... Why do people think that they're going to hide from police? I don't know. And then there was a... Golly. We may have to come back to this one because this woman is crazy. This Florida woman... tried to run over her ex. She got shot at. Then she set her own car on fire in Miami-Dade. We're going to have to share this with you tomorrow because this is a whole entire soap opera by itself, this story. Stick with us. Third hour next.
We've created more than 12,000 brand new jobs in 2 years. That's more than any president of American history has created in 4 years.
Now, Kane, first off, welcome back to the program. Top of our third hour, Dana last year with you. Kane was saying, well, I could, you know, that might be the most honest thing you said. I can actually believe, you know, the 12th. I can't. I don't even believe that. Mm-mm. I didn't believe that. I don't even believe that much. I don't even believe that much.
I love how you make me sound like a doof when you imitate my
voice. I was trying
voice.
To separate. Well, what do you want me to make you sound like?
Normal. Just normal men.
Just normal men.
We're innocent men. I mean,
we're just normal men.
What do you mean, normal men?
We're just innocent men.
Well, what am I supposed to make you sound like? In my head, this is what a man sounds like.
Look, if you look
I
the,
see this, I make my man voice.
If you is that what that was? If you look at the statistics as it pertains to the labor participation rate, we're about even as pre-pandemic. So Biden really hasn't created that many jobs. He tries to say millions and millions of jobs he's created, which he hasn't. He obviously misspoke there. And he hasn't done that. As a matter of fact, we're barely back at pre-pandemic levels at the moment. 12,000 sounds about right.
Do you know what's funny?
What?
Is that when you make everyone stay home and not go into work, and then when they all go back to work and you count it as jobs you've created, it looks like you've created a lot of jobs.
Yeah, that's funny, sad, not funny, haha.
That's funny, what? That's what it, that's the whole, that's the whole point. All right, so that is the he said that, was it yesterday evening, and I thought it was just kind of, I thought it was hysterical, that you 12,000 jobs. Oh, and then don't forget this message. Audio soundbite 4. First, he couldn't spell 8. And then I want to know what kind of house this is. Listen.
I get how folks are struggling with inflation. I grew up in a house where the price of gas went up, you felt it. It was a discussion at the kitchen table, not a joke.
Okay. If you felt it, did they beat you? I mean, like, the... the price of gas at the time, what did you say it was? Like 30-something cents a gallon?
37 cents a gallon. Would it go to 39 and you felt it?
I mean, we really felt it. Oh, my gosh. He's, RFK Jr. makes him look sane. Or, I mean, makes him look even crazier. I don't know. Actually, RFK Jr. makes him look... RFK Jr. looks like a way better candidate than he does for the Democrat Party. Like, I mean, I meant to say it makes RFK Jr. look sane.
Right. Well, he
is. Okay. Can we have this conversation real quick? Okay.
You don't think he is? Because I do.
Guys, seriously, I get it that, first off, who was it that was out there? Was Shmeev Bannon, Sloppy Steve, the guy who can't keep a job anywhere he goes, and who like grifts off of everyone else's coattails. He acts like he's playing 4D chess, like he convinced a Kennedy, who's a Democrat, who always loves running for office, to run for office, and he acts like it's 4D chess. Shut up. But the biggest thing is that I don't dislike RFK Jr. We agree on one thing, the vaccine stuff. Yeah. But then he's still RFK Jr.
Right.
He's, come on, he's a little...
What?
Wait, you think that he's like the second coming? Like, I get it.
What? Why do you do that? Why do you always go to the you extreme? Like it's someone's
just like
position.
You think, no, oh, you think he's the all second old people coming? Are guilty.
I never thought he's the second coming. All I know is that what he's been saying over the past couple of years, like you said, on the vaccines, on the mandates specifically, on what the government's been doing and the cover-ups as they relate to the biotech firms and all the pharmaceutical companies, he has been spot on from day one on that stuff. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah, he's that doesn't mean we agree on one issue. Will you be the president?
I haven't seen his agenda yet as it relates to how he would, you know, govern the country if it was up to him. But I'm interested to see that.
Is he going to the reason that he got a lot of energy, momentum lately is because a lot of people who are sensible fell on the same page as he did with regards to the government injections. And they were correct on the issue. He was correct on the issue. We've all been correct on the issue. And whether that is enough fuel to power him all the way through an election into the White House, no. It is not going to happen. Now, I don't dislike the guy personally at all. It's nothing personal. It's politics. It's just, you know, it's like I tell people, it's not, it's a business of the country. It's not show friends. It's show business. It's just not going to happen. And I don't even know if it's going to, I appreciate the argument that some are making that it is a great way to show Democrat hypocrisy and also to emphasize the level of statism that was accepted on a false premise with regard to the injection thing. But I don't even know if it's going to be enough of a distraction or it's going to create enough of a deficit to Biden's campaign. I just don't think. I don't think it will. Because you have, he's a ridiculous person, but Gavin Newsom is he's their powerhouse. He's the one, and they'll put everything behind him. He's the one who's next. So if Biden, I think there are some Democrats who are like, oh, we'll give Biden a chance to run. But then I think there are others that are really trying to edge him out.
I think RFK Jr. represents what I've always thought over the past 5 years as it relates to the Democrat Party, how they've changed from 20 years ago to today, as you
see
them.
Dude, he's still a far left progressive.
Okay, but what I'm saying is those Democrats that are on the fence in regards, they recognize how far left the Democrat Party's gone, yet they're not interested in following them that far. A guy like this brings them out more into the public in regards to their positions as more common sense as opposed to a left-right battle. Mm. And I think that's where I see a value as far as him in the conversation.
I don't think he's going to do much. I don't think he's going to push much.
Yeah, he may not, but I think the conversation is important to have, and I think it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out over the next few months, how the Democrats treat him in addition to how the media treats him.
I think it's too much of a niche for the left, because the left, one of the things that you got to remember, that everybody should remember, what we all see, they've become so hive mind, which is what I fight against within the right all the time. They've become so hive mind. It's terrifying. You used to be able to have more moderate Democrats. I mean, gosh, 10 years ago, you had more moderate Democrats in the party. I mean, you had people like the old timey guy, Zell Miller, who was more of a classical liberal than any of the. I mean, you go back for it, JFK. They've gotten so universally singular. There is no, they can't have. Iron sharpens iron within their party because they don't allow for any kind of debate of ideas. You either have to accept it or you're going against the party platform. And I think that a lot of their base have been conditioned to also follow that, which is why I think a lot of them are like, they reject it.
And that was represented today when they voted on the bill.
Oh my gosh, women's sports. I mean, that's crazy.
Right? Not one vote from Democrats to protect women's sports.
Not a single one. Oh, but the men. We've got to think of the men.
That hive mind.
Jiminy Christmas. So a couple of, I really don't want to talk about this. I really don't want to play this audio. I know we have it. So there's, Trump made a couple of things where he was going off at DeSantis, and I can this stop? Who is advising? Well, I know who's advising him. I'm being rhetorical. I know who's advising him. It's not the same people that were totally in charge last time, because a lot of those people have left, and I know this for a fact. And so some of the people who have been desperate to get relevancy, and they've been kind of like clingers, they have been elevated to these positions because they were open. And now you can see why none of these people who are with him now have ever been able to get hired anywhere else all throughout politics over the years, because they are so bad at advice. I think that someone called it a sugar high, and I thought it was a good description. The bump that he got in the polls after the indictment, which we all agree was ridiculous, that's dissipating. And instead of laying out what his accomplishments were, which I am amazed that he's not hitting the economy like mad right now, because that moves people and that is such a common ground issue. Instead, he's going after one of the most popular governors in the country, because not on anything of ideology or anything else, just because he doesn't want him as a challenger. He doesn't want the challenge. And I'm so already over this, and I'm tired of walking on eggshells around it, because there is the right's got to be careful not to be hive mind. I mean, for the love, we can't have both parties forget that we don't have a monarchy and that nobody is entitled to a seat or a position. No one's entitled to a vote. They have to earn it. Every single election, they have to earn it. There is none of this. The loyalty isn't to a candidate. By damn, they better have loyalty to us, the voter. The end. I don't care who you are. And so I hear these audio sound bites, and I really don't want to play them, because I don't dislike him as a person, but this is just dumb. What, Trump attacks DeSantis more than he attacks Newsom. And if Joe Biden isn't running in 24, Newsom will be. I don't understand these Republicans who think that the way forward is to attack one of the very few actual conservatives that we have in office who win elections. You know, I mean, despite everything that happened with split ticket voting, Florida was one of the very few areas that actually expanded the legislative body, got a supermajority, and made historically Democrat counties flip to Republican. They picked up Democrat voters by a massive percentage. They took over the demographics from Democrats. They took over Hispanic voters, Black voters. They got a huge chunk of new women voters. I mean, that is an expansion of the tent that has no Republican has so far done to that extent. Trump did a good job in 2016, but this constant pettiness and the incessant negativity is killing his campaign. He is killing his campaign. I would like to have a number of healthy choices. I do not, honestly, hands to sky, it is my biggest pet peeve. I cannot stand it when I see people that have potential take themselves out. This pettiness and this negativity has got to stop. If you're going to bitch about somebody, then focus on something that's fact-based. You put out a pudding ad? Really? I mean, the only reason that I'm going to tell you something, people have been trying to keep it nice. And I don't like going after people that, you know, I view as allies. But don't make me get into who was talking about taking the guns. And don't make me get into who created the shot. And don't make me get into all of this stuff. Because we're trying to keep a coalition intact here. But if this stuff keeps going, and this negativity keeps tarnishing the enthusiasm of Republican voters, I don't want to be pushed to that point, but damn, come on. Quit doing this. I don't like to see a guy that has a great legacy sink to the point where he feels like he can't campaign on his accomplishments and he's got to try to tear somebody else down. We're not that rich in conservatives that we can do that. I don't know if you know that. We're not. We got to get moving. We'll talk about this more.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Mm-hmm. All right. So a couple of things here. The Disney downsizing is continuing. ESPN is apparently going to be next on the layoff list. So some sources within ESPN are telling NBC that layoffs are going to begin early next week and they're going to target some on-air talent management. Nobody knows how many jobs are on the chopping block, but that's something ESPN has not commented on the matter. But, I mean, they said no one's immune. Disney's preparing to lay off 4,000 employees. Many of those are apparently going to be at ESPN. That's all. Ooh, and I told you all BuzzFeed was ceasing to exist. What is everyone going to do for their listicles? Oh, my gosh. How do you know? What? Yeah, they're ending, so. Also, apparently, I had this story for you yesterday, how Americans spend more money on legal marijuana than on chocolate, 30-something to $18 billion. It's, like, insane. It's an insane amount. I can't believe that is much more valuable than chocolate. There's an iPhone setting that thieves are using to lock you out of your Apple account. It's the recovery key. You need to probably check some of your stuff and make sure that it's thief-proof as best you can. Stick with us. We have more in store. Third hour finishing.
Catch The Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
100 seconds into flight. Our next major activity is going to be set down of the first stage. Houston Tracking Station now acquiring the vehicle. With shutdown, we will get separation of Starship and Super Heavy and ignition of the Starship engines. When Starship separates, we light up six engines in a staggered sequence. And if all goes well, those six engines will burn for almost 6.5 minutes. Onboard view from Starship.
And CNN, they carry this, and then they had people say freaking out over, oh, it explodes midair on the first launch attempt. And their reaction and the reaction that I've seen from some of the people on the left is truly stunning. And I'm going to explain why. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. Your lovable curmudgeon. Sign up for the newsletter, chapter and verse. And this, you know, this morning it was the first test flight of this. It's the fully integrated Starship and Super Heavy rocket. And it's pretty significant. This is a huge I know what I know and I know what I don't, but I do think that from what I understand, every single thing that they had involved with the creation of this rocket had been, they had it through test runs previously, but never before fully integrated like this, that thus the maiden launch. And this was, there was nobody in the rocket. It was obviously, it was an experiment. They were testing to see if they could just get the damn thing off the launch pad, ultimately, to get it up as far as they did in space, as far as they did in our atmosphere. And so SpaceX, this started trending online, a rapid unscheduled disassembly. And the left is like, well, we call that an explosion. Now, they hate Elon Musk because he bought Twitter. So they are rooting for him to fail with everything. And I was thinking about this as I'm watching here, you know, while we're on air and on break, I'm still seeing media reaction and the way that they're trying to spin it. And, oh, well, look, can you believe that this failed? And then SpaceX had tweeted, as if the flight test was not exciting enough, Starship experienced a rapid unscheduled disassembly before stage separation. And they apparently, there was like an engine cutoff sequence issue, and that's apparently what had happened. And they said, SpaceX had tweeted, with a test like this, success comes from what we learn, and the test today is going to help us improve Starship's reliability as SpaceX seeks to make life multi-planetary. And I think that that's what science is. You experiment, and you, even when you're searching for knowledge, even when you anticipate certain things aren't going to go correctly, the success comes from learning from what happened and then building off of that. And I can't believe I have to explain the process of education to the left, or that any of you do. I mean, that just, it's a little stunning. This is like some Galileo level ridiculousness here, to see the left deny the process of science, just like you saw the left deny, you know, the science with the government injection. I mean, this got off the launch pad. That is the huge thing. This was enormous. But these people want him to fail because they hate him. Like, apparently, do you know the New York Times pretty much almost had like a story about an explosion pre-written? I mean, I understand being prepared, but there's also being prepared to the point of, you know, you're trying to hurry to confirm bias. It's really stunning. It's a thing that I've noticed from the left. And I think that it is emblematic of the leftist ideology. Because think about it. There are some people in society that are incompatible with freedom. And what I mean by that is, freedom is more than just liberty. It's also about your freedom to celebrate your successes, but also it's about accountability. And it's about dealing with the consequences of bad decisions or mistakes. That's also a part of freedom. And one of the reasons why I believe that so many in the progressive left reject that and want government oversight is because that is not a deal that they are willing to make. These are people who do not want to accept consequences for bad decisions. If it's too big to fail, it's too big to fail. If you don't want to work as hard as someone else and you think that you should get special considerations for your mortgages, then you just push Fannie or Freddie to make those for you, as we're seeing with, you know, for instance, this new rule on mortgages. The left does not want to deal with the consequences of bad decisions or mistakes. And that is part of liberty. You cannot have liberty, real freedom, without it. Real freedom is not a guarantee of happiness. Real freedom is the guarantee to pursue happiness. And sometimes you find it and sometimes you don't. But that's freedom. The left tries to romanticize what they think it should be. It should be a constant state of comfort. It's having a safety net 24/7 and never actually having to hit rock bottom. And that is not what freedom is. And that's why I think so many people are incompatible with it, because they are too indulgent for it. And they are too afraid of it. They're afraid to take risks. Freedom is risk. This was a risk that SpaceX took today. And they were successful. When you consider back to like some previous NASA missions, remember what was it? Alan Shepard and some of this other stuff. They were terrified just to even see if they could get off the launch pad. And it was a huge success. And they're going to learn from what happened and build on that and then have more success. But that terrifies the left. They think that if they have the government involved, they can have an assurance of never having to deal with bad stuff. No consequences. They don't have to put themselves out there too much. They have a guaranteed everything. They want guaranteed income. They want a universal income. They want a universal this. They want all their health care taken care of, no matter what choices they make with their lives. They don't even want accountability of creating life. It is all about whatever's comfortable, and that is not what freedom is. That's why I say some people are absolutely, their view on life is incompatible with freedom. And these are the same people that throughout history have looked down on those who take risk, the entrepreneurs, the scientists, the philosophers, the everybody. I mean, you know, Galileo is sitting here trying to tell people, look, this is basic science. And everyone who wanted to, you know, believe in anti-science theory disagreed with him, and they called him, you know, everything under the book. Reputation ruined. It's not unlike what you see today with another theory on the government injection. And added to it is this religious devotion to their ideology. It is a religion, make no mistake. It's just a secular one. They loved Elon Musk until he took over Twitter. And he's not even a conservative. He says things that aren't conservative. There are things that he does that are not conservative. That's not a prerequisite for anything. I'm just saying that all of those checkpoints are so incredibly important to them. But yet he can't be categorized. And if you can't be categorized, and you then they can't identify you, and then they're afraid of you. All they know is that he took over a social media platform, and they don't get to bully people and censor people and suppress people and oppress people. So they hate him for that, because he took away one of their toys of torture. And so they hate him for it. They want him. They're rooting for them to fail, even at the expense of putting back humans exploring space. They're rooting for him to fail. They will cut their nose off in spite of their face. They absolutely will, every time. It is the wildest thing to me. But we're in a post-science society. Never before have we been so, I don't know, it feels like it's a theocracy. We live in a theocracy that isn't based on a traditional faith. It's based on a worship of Marxist ideals. Like, for instance, with the women in sports bill, you have guys who are speaking out in favor of the Biden administration, guys like Leah Thomas, who are men that competed as men and only recently decided they weren't getting anywhere in male sports, so they wanted to treat female sports as their JV league. And they are running women out of competition, taking women's opportunities, and we're supposed to accept this. To this point, by the way, there was an amazing ad. I tweeted it out. I don't even know what this watch company is. It is one of the best ads that I've ever seen on this issue. I don't necessarily think that companies should feel compelled to weigh in politics. And if you do, you need to do it well. And I think that this watch company did that. And I'm going to put this in your prep because it is worth the view. It's called Egard Watch Company. And it talks about like an actual female athlete who is always told by her dad, no woman alive can beat you. She was the fastest at what she was doing. She was winning all kinds of races until she had to compete against men. And then all of a sudden, everything changed. She wasn't the fastest anymore because a man was claiming to be a woman and wanting to compete against her. And it really, because that's what's lost in all of this. Everyone sits here and tries to humanize the story and tries to act like, oh, it's the men who are wanting to be women that are the victims here, but they ignore the pain and the suffering of erasing women. It is something else, because so much of my teenage years and growing up, I had all of this feminist garbage shoved in my face. And now, and I think any woman, I'm young Gen X. And I think particularly that part of that generation, before it got super cottage industry, you had that shoved in your face. Every movie, every, you know, songs, the Riot Girl movement, everything else, it was all shoved in your face. And now here we are, all these years later, and that same movement that was supposed to be about empowerment and freedom is now about subjugation. And these people want the government to make it so. Because it all comes down to freedom. They want enough freedom to live how they want to, but they don't want enough freedom that you don't have to affirm their self-perception. Some people are just incompatible with freedom. We have more to come. We have Today in Stupidity on the way.
To catch up on all the headlines and crazy wokery, download the Dana Show podcast and get Dana's perspective on the Dana Show.
So I saw that everyone started freaking out. I saw blue check trending, and Twitter just nuked all the blue checks, all the legacy ones too. So I don't have one on my account any longer. The radio one has one because Radio America purchased Twitter Blue, which I'm not going to buy. I think it was dumb to tie in Twitter Blue with the check mark because you're still throttled. I mean, after not having any assurances, and yes, I mean, I have like actual like screenshots where, like for instance, like for 3 months, my follower account stayed literally exactly the same for entirely 3 months. I didn't even lose anyone, which we all know would be a lie. Somebody's going to get mad and would unfollow me over something. And then there would be times, like days, where I would not have any mentions or I would disappear. You know how people can add you to lists? I would totally be, it would say zero list. I had other people send me those screenshots saying, why aren't you on lists anymore? What happened? And then like the later that day it was restored. Or if I would search for like latest tweets for my account, it would pull up stuff like, you know, weeks old and you couldn't find things. It would unfollow me from like even my own husband's account. I had to refollow Kane once. I mean, so it's like, why would you pay for that? Regardless if this was due to stuff that was implemented before Musk took over, wouldn't you get this stuff in order before you start saying, well, if you want this, then you have to pay? Because why the hell would you pay for that? I mean, if you want to pay to get kicked around, I mean, I have better suggestions. So I'm not going to have one because I'm not going to pay for it. You know, Radio America can pay for the radio show one. And Steve said that they need it for having longer videos because you have to have, you know, for I'm going to lose my creator studio. I'm going to lose access to all of that with my account. But that's what it is because I'm not paying for it. The newsletter, Substack, Chapter and Verse, you can go and subscribe to that because I got a lot of good stuff over on that. And I have notes that I started kind of messing with here and there. The weird stuff that doesn't seem to fit in anywhere else, I can put it into a note. That way I don't clog up your inboxes with stuff. And that way you can, you know, you can get stuff that is newsworthy, but maybe not be a standalone piece like all by itself. So go and subscribe Chapter and Verse on that. And then of course, don't forget Instagram and Facebook and YouTube where we'll have our discussion with Alex Epstein up there as well. All right. Today in Stupidity, Kane.
All right. It'll be the Perry Farrell of Congress. Rep. DeLauro.
Mm-hmm.
All right, she's praising Buttigieg here because he assigned gender to inanimate objects. It's true. Listen.
And to make important investments to address the roadway safety crisis, including the critical funding that would accelerate the development. And this is an area I've written to you about, of the use of female dummies in crash testing.
Oh.
This will start to fight the gender inequity among vehicle safety and crash.
Always hated the gender inequity in crash test dummies. I'm glad she's in Congress to make sure they're represented.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is. Yeah. Representative Perry Farrell so crashed. But hey, women's sports, though.
Stupid.
Not that you can't apply the same logic to women's sports.
No.
Don't you dare.
Can't
you bigot.
Can't
you bigot.
It.
Yeah. Tomorrow's Friday. We did make it all the way to the end of the week. So we have that. We made it to the end of the week. So we'll have a bunch of fun stuff to go through tomorrow. Folks, I hope you have a great night. Don't forget, find us on Facebook, YouTube, like, and subscribe. God bless. Back with you tomorrow.